We're going to spend some time with development here as well. It's always great to check in with the folks from the Lansing Economic Area Partnership. Almost a year ago, LEAP received a $500,000 grant from the EPA. Now, this funding was to be used to identify and clean up brownfield sites in the region so those sites can be redeveloped. Brownfields are places where things like factories, gas stations, garages once stood, places which still may pose hazards to human health and the environment. So Current State decided to check in here on the progress being made toward bringing these sites back to life. I'm joined today by Keith Lambert. Keith is the Tri-County Development Manager for the Lansing Economic Area Partnership, or LEAP. He's managing the EPA grant for our region. Good to have you back, Keith.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You were here on the show 10 months ago, last June, when this $500,000 EPA brownfield grant was first announced. Tell us about how these dollars have been spent between then and now.
Well, since then, the EPA, obviously, their federal processes kind of dictate, and we were actually able to start spending the money in September, October timeframe. So over the last 6 months, roughly, we've approved 22 projects. And this is the first time we've ever had a coalition grant where it's across the entire Tri-County region, Clinton County, Eaton County, and Ingham County. So we've done projects in all three of the county seats, St. John's, Mason, Charlotte. We've done a project in East Lansing recently. We've done a good number of projects in downtown Lansing and some of the neighborhood areas of Lansing. So this has been a really interesting one because before they were just the city of Lansing's or a specific county, and now we can really go at the speed of development and the interest and put the money into the right things at the right time.
So 22 projects. Identify a couple that our listeners are more apt to be familiar with, maybe more visible sites.
Mm-hmm. So Oliver Towers is a good one, right in downtown Lansing. That's a project that the Ides have been looking at for a long time. It was a very troubled property. There was a fire that has led to a lot of water damage and issues. There was already asbestos in the building. That's one of the things. Any building built prior to the 70s really typically has asbestos-containing material. Mm-hmm. Lead paint is also a challenge in older construction buildings. So you mentioned the gas stations, the factories, the more conventional thoughts of brownfields, but there's a whole lot of properties out there that have some hindrance to redevelopment. And these funds are used to kind of just take care of some of the expensive work before you can actually get in the ground and start renovating, doing partial demo, things like that.
A lot of dollars get spent on just on the assessment phase,
exactly.
Let alone the remediation. I beg your pardon. I'm under the impression, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm under the impression that of the $500,000 you got from EPA, 80% just went toward assessment, correct? Studying what's on the site.
Yeah, so the ability with this grant is it goes into the assessment work, and then we can do cleanup planning. For the actual cleanup to occur, we typically use other local incentives that we already have there. For certain projects, we can go for other money from the EPA to do the actual cleanup. But this is all, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars per project oftentimes just to get to the point that they can start the actual project.
Yeah,
and that's just money that developers, they don't want to spend, and they could go to a greenfield site and not see those types of costs. So for us to be able to come in and address those for them through a grant is huge.
Does the assessment phase typically eat up the majority of your the budget of a brownfield grant?
Well, we can actually – we have a couple cool mechanisms. In the city of Lansing, in Ingham County, there's different pots of money where we can actually recover the grant funds through a brownfield tax increment financing. And not to get into too much of the depth of it, but basically we can – get back the EPA funds, recirculate them into a local pot of money, and keep using them time and time again. So we do that in certain municipalities where that is already set up.
How big of a deal was it that Eaton and Clinton County were a part of this? I mean, is that really just kind of a sea change here, or have there been opportunities in the past for LEAP to work on brownfields in those two counties, let's say?
There have been opportunities. I think what was really kind of groundbreaking about this grant is that we brought everyone together and just kind of shaped the situation of these funds are much more competitive now. It used to be just really the Midwest part of the country that was applying for these and getting them religiously. All of a sudden, the South and other areas of the country started saying, we can use these funds for things in our areas. Mm-hmm. So it got very competitive. And you were running into a situation where in East Lansing, a Clinton County and Eaton County on their own, they really didn't have a shot at the funds. But together with the city of Lansing and the urban core, it was possible.
Have the feds increased brownfield revenue in recent years? What's the pattern there?
It's been steady. The program has been around since the late 90s, and we've been using it for, I mean, basically since, you know, the early 2000s. We picked up on it pretty quickly here. And the city of Lansing has been receiving these grants every 2 to 3 years for, you know, the last decade. So we've been able to keep receiving them because the city of Lansing itself has a lot of urban sites. It has a lot of manufacturing properties that need rehabilitation and need the assessment funds. So there was definitely a need there. But that's not to say that there's not a need in Charlotte,
as
a good example. And we're working on 3 or 4 projects in Charlotte. And they just wouldn't have access to these funds if it weren't for the regional approach that we were able to take.
I just think it's interesting, too, because here in Lansing, people are familiar with, you know, acres and acres of old auto manufacturing sites. Mm-hmm. But some of these sites you work on are really relatively much, much smaller, mm-hmm. as I understand it. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are. I mean, in downtown DeWitt is a good example. We're working with the city and a startup brewer who wants to put a brewery into this historic church building. And you think about a historic church, it's like, okay, well,
think you'd have a whole lot of problems.
Exactly.
There,
but again, from it being 100 years old, you're going to have to do a phase one. There's very likely asbestos-containing materials that were part of the construction. There could be lead-based paint. And just as a liability thing, you have to spend like $5,000 to go through this work of figuring out where those things are. And if you don't do that, you can't do major renovation. So this is, in this case, an entrepreneur. They don't want to, you know, it's $5,000 is a major chunk of change to them.
Of course.
So for us to be able to take care of that up front for them and help them spend their hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's just a big advantage that would otherwise be a challenge for them.
We're talking today about the work being done in the Lansing region to clean up and redevelop former brownfield sites. The Lansing Economic Area Partnership is using a $500,000 grant it received from the EPA in 2015. Our guest is Keith Lambert. He's the Tri-County Development Manager with LEAP. There are a handful of high-profile projects going on in the region. Just last week, it was announced that Spartan Motors in Charlotte will build a new 85,000-square-foot plant to build the Isuzu F-Series truck. How did brownfield funds come into play there?
So that was an awesome project because it was really kind of different levels of government stepping up. We were able to use everything from city to county assistance to the EPA federal funds to basically shape a situation where Spartan can take care of some of the contamination. They have fill issues. Before Spartan was even on the property, there were challenges with a previous owner burying things, tanks and waste mm-hmm. materials under the ground. So anytime they want to move earth on that site, they need to do a good amount of assessment, do care work, planning on how to clean up the site and make sure they're not disturbing things that are underground. So we were able to get in there and do that assessment work for them. We also worked with the city of Charlotte to do their first ever brownfield tax increment financing, which is helping Spartan to recoup about $1 million in certain costs that have to do with the contamination issues that are present.
Another big construction job is happening at Michigan Avenue, not too far from here. The former Story Olds car dealership mm-hmm. is being transformed into Skyview on Michigan Avenue. I think a car dealership would be a classic example of a brownfield.
Mm-hmm.
All
yeah,
kinds
so
of
within
unsavory fluids and such things.
Mm-hmm. And petroleum type challenges are one of the biggest priorities, and that's actually within the grant that we received. 100,000 of it is specifically designated for petroleum type projects out of the 500,000. Mm-hmm. And the other side is hazardous materials, which is kind of more general hazardous substances, which is everything else you can imagine. But petroleum is specifically problematic, and a lot of anywhere that had cars parked, garage-type environments, but dealerships are another good example. This petroleum and these things, they can seep into different areas, and we're really looking forward to that project, and not only cleaning up the site, but seeing a 9-story building there will be a game-changer for Michigan Avenue.
Back in June, you mentioned a site in Charlotte where there'd once been a meth lab explosion,
mm-hmm.
and you said at the time that type of incident can be a barrier to redevelopment. Describe your role here. How do you navigate that with private sector developers when they express a little bit of interest, but then you've got to disclose, or they find out, hey, mm-hmm. there was a meth lab explosion there. How do you navigate that situation?
Well, we're usually pretty open and honest about it. I mean, generally speaking, these are going to be local developers, local businesses that are looking to expand. There's typically a local route to who's going to take on this site. So the municipalities involved, we're lucky to have boots on the ground. We have four different qualified environmental firms that are out there talking to people, figuring out where redevelopment can happen. And then we step in with these grant funds, and oftentimes as we're approving them, we're meeting with the project team and just talking through how from start to finish we can make this redevelopment happen. An assessment, of course, is at the beginning of that, and then you need to get into the actual cleanup and then hopefully the investment in new construction or the rehabilitation of an aging structure. And that, I mean, it's a very long process, as we know with Skyview as an example. I mean, we met with that developer almost 2 years ago, and now we're seeing, you know, the fruits of our early labors. We got them all the housing market information. We told them everything we could possibly about the site, and we go from there. So we kind of facilitate the interaction with the government, with the proper parties to do the assessment work. We get them involved with other businesses that could have the right kind of adjacencies for them to work together, and we just do everything we can to make the project a go.
Ultimately, what happened in that case?
In the case of Skyview?
The meth lab.
The meth lab, there's actually very recently, within the last month or so, we were approached by a local father or a local husband and wife who are looking at putting something there. It's still in its early stages. I can't say exactly what it's going to be, but there is interest. And the fact that we have these funds, again, the city representatives are meeting with people. There's a buzz, especially in Charlotte right now, about these funds and how we can use them. And it's just changing the community conversation around the really tricky sites that are otherwise, you know, just the ones that people won't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
And we can get them in there and at least have the discussion. And hopefully you have enough of those and you're going to see some redevelopment happen.
There's two particular projects I want to touch on here in the time that we have left, which isn't much, but we got Rio Town south of 496.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have seen the iconic Rio Town sign there, and many remember it as the site of the Deluxe Inn, which had a pretty unsavory reputation. Do you have an update on what's happening in Rio Town south of 496?
Yeah, Rio Town is a very interesting area because regardless of what the current uses are, almost everything is brownfield eligible there because of the industrial past dating back to the late 1800s. So, and you have, you know, gas stations here and there, and there's always concerns about what's traveling underground, and assessment helps us figure that out. But Rio Town has a whole lot of kind of speculation going on. The Deluxe Insight you talked about, it's looking like it's going to be an extended stay hotel. We're excited about to see that on the corner and connect into downtown. But there's just a lot of interest in a few larger projects that we're hoping to reveal within the next few months here in Rio Town.
Okay, very interesting. We'll try to stay connected. We've got 30 seconds here. Tell us what you can about Red Cedar Renaissance. There continues to be news about that in terms of potential likely boutique hotels and,
right,
and what have you. What can you tell us?
Well, it's very, very complex, as anyone who's involved will tell you right off the bat. There are still a lot of things that need to fall into place in terms of the state incentives are a huge chunk to really close the gap and make the project a go. But there's a lot of good development, a lot of successful negotiation that our team in the city of Lansing, along with Ferguson and Frank Cass and then the development team, have been able to do. The drain project is kind of separate but on the same similar track.
Right.
And that's going to be a huge deal, too, to clean up the Mink-Gunton Rue drain. So I think, again, between Skyview and that, it's going to be a completely different Avenue.
I was just going to make the same point.
Mm-hmm.
Visualizing Skyview on the north side of Michigan and Red Cedar Renaissance on the south side is you've really got to work overtime to imagine. I mean, if it all unfolds, it will be it would appear to be a game changer.
Absolutely.
We've been talking about brownfields redevelopment in the greater Lansing area. The Lansing Economic Area Partnership is using a $500,000 EPA grant to clean up and repurpose more than 20 sites in the area, 22 altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Keith Lambert's the Tri-County Development Manager for LEAP. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Keith.